The incredible winning streak continues as Nelly Korda captures the Chevron Championship. Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, and now Nelly Korda. Five wins, five straight starts.
What a run it has been. It began back at the end of January with the LPGA Drive-On Championship, a playoff win over Lydia Ko. She took 7 weeks off and then won three consecutive weeks on tour. The Sari Pack Championship, the Ford Championship, and then beat Leona Maguire in the championship match at the T-Mobile Match Play at Shadow Creek in Las Vegas, and then topped it all off after a two-week break by winning her second major championship at the Chevron. And she was asked yesterday where this fits in the dreams of a kid.
Is this a moment you dreamed of? I know we talk about little girls' big dreams out here. Is this a moment you dreamed of as a little girl?
For sure, yeah. I mean, my first ever major, competing in a major, was at the U.S. Women's Open at Sabonic, and that was when I dreamt of winning major championships, and then to have two under my belt now is a dream come true.
You talked about your injury, being in your own way mentally. Mm-hmm. What would you tell little girls to build their mental fortitude?
Honestly, to never give up, to stay patient, to stay your course, and not to compare yourself to others, because everyone has a different path in their life, and to never let the adversities of life or anything take you down, to always rise.
Damon, it's been a long time since Nelly Korda could show up at any tournament under the radar. By the time she got to the Chevron, she was the only blip on the screen. She was going for five in a row, very historic accomplishment. To me, it's less impressive the manner of the win than the circumstances in which she won, with that level of scrutiny and attention on her. This has to go down as one of the most impressive streaks we've ever seen. Men's or women's golf.
It really is, and I want to start with the injury. 2 years ago, she couldn't even play in this championship because of the blood clot, and she talked about kind of the road mentally that it took to get back to this type of golf, and this type of golf has carried her from California and Arizona, Nevada, Florida. I mean, this is someone who's won on different types of grasses, different time zones,
different weather
states,
conditions,
different weather, different formats, match play, stroke play. We saw what happened 3 years ago when she won four times and added an Olympic gold medal as well. And you kind of wondered, would she ever get back to that level? It looks as though she has surpassed that level.
She's in very rarefied air now, only with Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam in terms of the five wins. She's going for six this week at Wilshire Golf Club in Los Angeles, which does actually... It's a golf course where she has history. She's got two top 10 finishes on that course in LPGA events. And you kind of think, if it's a golf course and Nelly Korda is playing, I kind of like her chances these days, but particularly when there is some history there for her as well. And at this point, I don't know that the pressure could really build anymore. If you're going to match history for five in a row and it's at a major championship, that's got to be as much scrutiny as you can get under. In a way, it's easy to say that sitting here, but everything should feel like gravy. From
it
this
should,
because it doesn't look as though it's bothering her.
Well, it doesn't, but you talk about how the spotlight has, you know, shone brighter and brighter on her, but it sounds like from her comments that she's making things simpler and simpler. We know that golf is complicated for the 20 handicapper, but even sometimes for the best player in the world, and you can kind of make things more difficult. And she said that post-round when she was speaking to Tom Abbott, that her key has been to make things simpler and simpler. And we've often talked about, you know, how is she as the world number one? Maybe not comfortable with the light shining bright in terms of the off-the-course stuff and being a spokesperson for this game. I loved her personality yesterday. Tom asked, are you going to jump into the water? And she said, heck to the yeah, showing a little bit of personality that I think that any viewer or golf fan would love to see.
And she is so dominant right now that the gap in the Rolex rankings between Nelly Korda's number one and Lilia Vu's number two is the same as the gap from Lilia Vu at number two to number 186 in the rankings. So she's as dominant as it gets. It's also worth pointing out that in her five straight victories here, she's won $2.4 million. In his last five starts, Scottie Scheffler's won four of them. $16.2 million.
It's been a lot of fun.
There's an enormous gap there, but certainly not in the attention that both of those people are getting these days.
Well, someone who's watched a lot of Nelly Korda's run over the last couple of months is our own Grant Boone, who joins us on this Monday. Grant, always great to spend some time with you. Why do you think this run from Nelly is happening now?
I think that's a great question. I think if you want to look at the alchemy of how this all happened, you could say a little bit of good timing, a whole lot of hard work. And I think for Nelly, a career high in grit. I mean, go back to Florida, Bradenton, down bad. She had blown a four-shot lead in seven holes on that Sunday, three down with two to play. Lydia Ko had the champagne on ice, ready to go into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, how did it end? Well, Nelly goes eagle, birdie, and gets into a playoff and then wins it. And as you noted, took 7 weeks off and came back. But you just think there's, in a way, this streak never should have even started. I mean, you don't go eagle, birdie very often. But then again, what Nelly Korda is doing right now doesn't happen very often. And I did think it was a coincidence, maybe not, that on the week that Taylor Swift drops her new album, the LPGA just, after dipping its toes in the water, took a giant cannonball leap into its Nelly era.
Well, someone else who looks as though they're about to take a cannonball leap is that puppy over your left shoulder right now, Grant, who seems to be getting very excited by the
talk. That's Rosie. Yeah.
Nice
Rosie,
to meet Rosie.
Nelly. I mean, yeah, it's a big week for the women.
There's been a lot of conversation, Grant, over whether Nelly's somewhat reluctant to take on the scrutiny that comes with being the world number one and a dominant world number one. She is very clearly the face of her sport right now. Do you feel as though she's getting more comfortable in that position?
Shy to superstar. I mean, that's kind of where we are right now. And she's admitted that she's had to step out of her comfort zone just a little bit. I mean, when you consider the prophecy, you know, for Nelly with her dad, Peter, mom, Regina, big sister, Jess, brother, Seb, you know, all elite athletes, it was there. It was predicted that she would have that greatness. But the success that she achieved, becoming number one in the world, as you noted, winning an Olympic medal, in a way became the albatross. And then she had the injuries and basically said, I hate it here. I don't want to be down. I want to get back out and play again. She talked about being grateful for being able to play again after not being able to compete because of injury, the blood clot. And then last year had to take some time off because of the back injury and came back and was not herself. I think she is understanding now on a different level that when you do things that only two other one-name wonders have done, Nancy and Annika, that there is more expected of you. Nancy naturally wanted the attention. She thrived a little bit like Arnold Palmer, I think, wanting the people interaction. Annika wasn't as comfortable. She wanted her space, but realized for the better for the betterment of the sport, maybe I need to step out, play colonial as Annika did. And I think Nelly is understanding that as well. And I think it's a good question to ask. What's a reasonable expectation that the LPGA, that fans should have, that the media should have of Nelly, for someone who wants her privacy, but also is very much carrying the banner for the LPGA Tour?
Grant, how much more can she carry this forward? I mean, Mickey Wright won 13 times in a season. Annika's won 11 times. Mickey won 11 times also in 64, won those 13 in 1961. Are we on the verge of an historically great season, or is this just a hot run from a wonderfully dynamic player?
Well, I think you just have to say we've already seen things that we haven't seen. I mean, she not only tied the all-time record for most consecutive starts won from Nancy and Annika. We talk about that a lot. We haven't really talked a whole lot about the fact that she's also tied the LPGA record for most wins in consecutive events on the LPGA calendar. And she can break both of those records if she wins this week at Wilshire. As you noted, she has a couple of top 10 finishes there. And I would just say that the last time she was fully healthy, she won four LPGA events including a major championship, and not included in those four LPGA official wins was that gold medal in Tokyo. Then she began having the issues early in 2022. So a fully healthy Nelly, as Morgan Pressel noted very early in the season back in Bradenton, a fully healthy Nelly is a dangerous Nelly, and we're seeing that. You see six wins in a season doesn't happen very often. We're now seeing, as you noted, that massive gap doubling up, lapping the field in the Rolex rankings has only happened a couple of times. Yanni Sen, at the height of her greatness back a little over a decade ago, Lorena Ochoa did the same thing. But when you're talking about having twice as many points as second place, you're talking about stuff that just, you know, it doesn't happen very often. And so I think it's fair to ask, could we be seeing something that we've never seen before? We're talking 7, 8, 9 wins in a season. That would be great. We're already seeing her do things that American players really haven't done. Most wins now, career wins by an American born since 1990, for example, 13 wins. By the way, she had 10 Hall of Fame points when the year started. That's good, but 27 is the minimum. She now has 16, and we're not even in May yet, so 27 is that number. I would just say I wouldn't put anything past her at this point, and if things go well, we could be looking at an historic fortnight come Sunday night at Wilshire.
Grant, there's so much chatter on social media about Nelly's performance yesterday and what a run she's on. The subtext of that was it took 6 hours for Nelly Korda to play that final round yesterday. Is it about time the LPGA Tour did something about the pace of play that seems to constantly hurt its product?
Are you singling them out as if to say the men's tour doesn't have a problem?
Well, the men's tour does. I think professional golf, period, has a problem. Yeah. But if you have an LPGA champion taking 6 hours to play the final round of a major and the fans are noticing, it would suggest it's a problem.
There's no doubt it was a problem. And she said it was the longest back nine of her life. I think it was the longest back nine of any of our lives. I mean, it took forever. It took 6 hours plus to play. You did have a situation at the 18th hole. In which you had the grandstands behind the green. That caused a ton of rulings. You had to bring people out, the rules officials out. You had windy conditions. It was a much, different golf course on Sunday. You had those beautiful overhead looks at the club at Carlton Woods. And you could tell through the trees the wind was really whipping, and the golf course played a couple of strokes harder than it did in round three. You were playing in threes. All of that being said, I think the LPGA has a better track record of handing out slow play penalties than maybe any other tour. And I think in this case, because of the circumstances with the grandstand behind the 18th and players almost wanting to hit it into that grandstand to give them a backstop a little bit, I think that added to it. I don't think anybody wanted to see yesterday was about Nelly, and yet it took too long. But I would say that the LPGA, probably better than any other tour I know of, is willing to hand out those penalties. And I don't know why they didn't yesterday, but I think we can all agree 6 hours is too long. On the other hand, it gave us a chance to kind of bask in all of Nelly's greatness.
And that greatness was on full display yesterday. Grant, we appreciate your perspective. A little extra kibble for Rosie. She was very well behaved. Thanks so much.
Rosie says hi.
Of course, Nelly is the third Rolex number one player to win the Chevron Championship, following Lorena Ochoa back in 2008 and Lydia Ko back in 2016. Well, this morning, the second best golfer in the world won his fourth title in 5 starts. It's tough to keep up with Nelly. We're going to dive into Scottie Scheffler's latest trophy grab. That's coming up next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Took a Monday finish, but the weather no match for the world number one Scottie Scheffler, back in the winner's circle once again. This time at the RBC Heritage, 4 wins in his last 5 starts on the PGA Tour. How about his last 51 starts, though? About this, 10 wins, that's 19.6% of the time. 23 top threes, that's 45% of the time. 34 top tens, that's two out of every three starts. World number one joined our Todd Lewis.
Well, Scotty has red cardigan after winning the Arnold Palmer Invitational, green jacket. Now you got a tartan jacket to add to your closet. Congratulations on the day. You know, when I talked to you on Wednesday, you were emphatic. You said, I am not here to be a ceremonial golfer. I am convicted to win. Now that you've done that, how much pride do you take in this victory after the Masters?
Yeah, it's definitely nice. You know, I meant that at the beginning of the week. I didn't come here for any other reason to play well and compete. And you know, I've said it a bunch. It's the most fun when you're in contention. And so the last couple of days have been a ton of fun out here on the course. And, you know, fortunate to be leaving as the champion. Mm.
You've accomplished a lot of it last few months. Today, 10 wins now, double digits on the PGA Tour. How impactful is that for you?
I think that's pretty special. I don't really know how to put it into words, but, you know, it's been a long journey up until this point. And so to have double-digit wins out here is very special. You know, I grew up as a kid just trying to make it out here to the tour, and to be standing here as a winner again is a pretty cool feeling.
No one talked about quickly this morning coming out here. It was definitely a temperature change. It was colder. Wind was blowing. Mentally, what did you bring the golf course those few holes you had to play?
I mean, I just had to stay locked in. I mean, it's with the conditions like this, I think it was still possible to make a couple birdies. And so you had a guy like Sahith there on 16 when he made birdie. And then, you know, if he birdies the last two, he's sitting there at 18. And, you know, I got to play some really good golf to make pars there coming down the stretch, especially here on 18. So I did my best to get locked in and felt like I did a good job of that. And then on 18, you know, I finally felt, I think, how tired I was as we were walking up to the green. I kind of got up there by the green somewhere, and then I could kind of feel the adrenaline wearing off and, you know, the tiredness setting in a bit.
Scotty, as well as you are playing right now, are you internally in your head at the mountaintop of being the player that you want to be, or is there still work left?
I think that's what's funny about golf. I think there's always work left. I think, you know, that's part of the challenge is managing, trying to get better while also knowing that you're pretty good at the same time. And so I've always been a guy that's trying to make little incremental improvements and sticking to my fundamentals. The fundamentals are always a big part of what I do in practice, and you know, working on my body. It's always the little things, and so I'm just going to do my best to continue to take care of that stuff.
All right, finally, no trophy is going to replace being a father. What are you so much looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm excited to get home. Like I said, I'm pretty tired right now, but I don't think I'll be getting much sleep in the next couple of weeks. But we'll see. We'll see how everything goes at home. Yeah, who knows when the baby will decide to come, but it'll be pretty exciting.
Well, congratulations on becoming a father, and congratulations on another win.
All right. Thanks.
Scottie Scheffler, the champion here at Hilton Head.
Not much sleep in the next couple of weeks. Try next couple of years. Congrats to Scottie. A lot of great things happening in his life. I tell you what, one thing he told the media today, he's addicted to the feeling of hitting a well-struck shot. He's doing it time again in the biggest events, Players, Masters, two signature events. We don't know if this is Rory 2014 or Jordan 2015, Jason Day 2015, DJ 2017, or if this is Jack Nicklaus in 72 or Tiger in 2000. What we do know is this is special, and if I'm Rory or I'm Justin Thomas right now, I'm thinking, what do I have to do to beat big, bad Scottie Scheffler?
Yeah, those are some guys who aren't getting much sleep these days either, and it's a little more worrisome in their respect because, as you pointed out, he ain't beating the B teams out here. He wins the Masters twice. He wins the Players twice. The API, the RBC. He's going up against the best that are out there every week. And we're starting to see this trend emerge where the mortals division every week of the tournament is actually quite thrilling. If you take his name away from the top of the leaderboard here, it was a heck of a shootout. If you took his name away from the top of the leaderboard at Augusta National, it was a heck of a shootout there as well. But he does what great players do. He sucks the life out of the tournament in the sense that he doesn't give these guys hope that there's a car wreck coming. Yeah. And even the one time yesterday on the 15th when he headed into the penalty area, he manages to save par. At no point does Scottie Scheffler give these guys any hope that there's a chink in the armor there, that there's any kind of weakness. And that's got to be demoralizing for guys who see him come out and do this week after week after week.
He's beaten them, and he's beaten them badly. Three-shot wins, four-shot wins, five-shot wins, and his life off the course in great order as well. And you wonder the complications, the addition of a child, the complexities, never had one before, how will life change? He already has, by our estimations, ducks in a row. Life perspective in the right place. I imagine it's only going to be a joyful moment for him, the lack of sleep notwithstanding, that's coming for Scottie Scheffler. It just seems like everything, family there, traveling with them, wife there, sometimes not, father, mother, sisters there. It just seems like everything in working order.
And the real currency on the PGA Tour these days is FedEx Cup points. That determines so much of dominance. It determines so much of people's future.
Yeah.
You could take away the FedEx Cup points he earned in Augusta, and take away the FedEx Cup points he earned in the Players, and he'd still be leading by a mile. That's how dominant he is.
Slowing down, and three more majors to come for the Masters champ. Speaking of Masters champs, still to come on Golf Today, the International Presidents Cup captain, Mike Weir, won the Masters back in 2003. He joins the show, readying for the Royal Montreal Presidents Cup. How's his squad shaping up? We'll get the details coming up. Back on Golf Today. Now today, April 22nd, is Earth Day. And every day is Earth Day for golf course superintendents. Up early, stay late, as courses rely upon healthy soil and water, as supers use science-based best management practices to provide healthy playing surfaces. Golf courses also provide critical green space. Let's welcome in Kevin Sunderman, the Chief Operating Officer for the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. Kevin, great to see you. How are the GCSAA and golf course superintendents keeping golf sustainable for the game's future?
Well, the sustainability all starts with the hard work of our 20,000 GCSAA members and golf course superintendents all around the world. Along with their teams, they work hard each and every day to make sure the things that they do not only provide great conditions, but do it in a way that's environmentally responsible. These men and women, they're essential to the game. Without them, we have no golf courses to play. But it's not just about today. They think about the future as well. I don't know how often golfers think about it, but golf courses superintendents don't show up in the morning thinking that, well, I guess I'll water today, I'll fertilize today, I'll mow the grass. It's quite the contrary. They plan months in advance for the work that they do. And that planning is all based on what we call best management practices, which is those are based on sound science, and they're a guideline for every golf course superintendent to build their plans to make sure that the work they do is not only going to be successful in providing great conditions, but also in an environmentally friendly manner.
Kevin, the Earth Day message has been around for quite some time, probably a little more recently in a golf context. Are you confident that the message is getting through to both golf courses and to individual golfers?
We have to work on that message each and every day. You can't tell it often enough. Tell you one way we're telling it here today is through a program called the First Green. And that's a program that GCSAA has where we partner with school-age children and our golf course superintendents across the country to bring students to the golf course for a learning lab on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. And through that engagement, those kids are able to learn about the impact we have on nature, the things that we do that are proactive towards sustainability, the wildlife that can be encountered. And we're really excited because in 2024, we also added arts to STEM education, creating STEAM education, because we realize that kids aren't always going to be engaged in the science and technology and math aspect of it, but they might have that spark ignited around the arts. And so in 2024, who knows, maybe we will have the next Donald Ross, Alistair McKenzie, or maybe even Alice Dye. So we're looking forward to exposing the kids and their parents and the teachers, as well as the entire communities, on the great work that we do with golf courses.
You know, golfers, they love Tiger and Scottie and Nelly, but their favorite golfer really at the end of the day is themselves. They want to break the course record and break 90, 80. You know, what can golfers do to help keep golf sustainable beyond, repairing their divots?
Well, I mentioned best management practices just a minute ago, and the sound science that our programs, our golf course superintendents base their programs on, that sound science needs to evolve each and every day, and that requires research. Well, we have just kicked off our annual research funding program called Rounds for Research. And why this matters to you and your viewers is the fact that this morning the auction opened up at Rounds, the number 4, research.com, where you can go and bid on over 1,600 available rounds across the entire United States. this going to give you access to not only the course you're usually playing, but a lot of private clubs have donated rounds to so we can use those proceeds to invest in research. So that club up the street that you've always died to play, that you've never been able to get on, now's your chance. Beyond that, we have some bucket list opportunities. Bandon Dunes, for example, Pinehurst number 2. And we even have opportunities for a year's membership through the Dormy Network. Very exclusive access to 6 clubs around the country. So I want everybody to check it out, roundsforresearch.com. That's rounds, the number 4, research.com. And even if it's not that private club or bucket list course, the course you play every Saturday may have donated a round. You might be able to pick it up at a discount. But that's a great way that everybody here can get involved today.
National Golf Day is coming up in a few weeks, Kevin. In what ways is this sustainability message going to be driven home at that particular point in time?
So National Golf Day, we're going to be gathering as a golf industry in Washington, D.C. We're going to be meeting with members of Congress and conducting some community service projects on the Mall and Langston Golf Course. But honestly, it's really important that we're able to deliver the message to the regulators and to the lawmakers of our country, the fact that golf courses are an asset to communities. They provide valuable green space, wildlife habitat, pollinator habitat. There's numerous benefits that golf courses provide, and it's important that those who make the rules on our behalf are aware of all the great things that the game provides.
Kevin, looks beautiful at Canyon Farms behind you. Hope you get 18 in. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, guys. Happy Earth Day to you.
Well, Nick Taylor overcame the pressure of winning at home at last year's Canadian Open. But imagine how this guy feels. Mike Weir, captaining the international team in the President's Cup north of the border. And they haven't won in a quarter century. Today he announced the backroom team he's going to rely on. And we'll have those names coming up next.
We're back on Golf Today. Oh, we 2024 President's Cup will take place September 26th. Through the 29th, Royal Montreal Golf Club in Canada. International side looking to win the President's Cup for the first time since 1998. To do so, have to upend Jim Furyk's squad. 6 automatics, 6 captain's picks. Look at that top 6. Scheffler, Clark, Schauffele, Homa, Morikawa, and Tagala.
And the international team is currently led by Hideki Matsuyama. 4 countries represented in that top 6 right now, including the host nation hero, Nick Taylor. And the team that Mike Weir will have in the back room alongside him also has a lot of familiar faces. Today he announced his 4 assistant captains, including 2 former captains, Ernie Els and Trevor Immelman, alongside Australia's Jeff Ogilvy and Camilo Villegas. And the President's Cup captain, Mike Weir, joins us now from Montreal. Mike, we often hear captains say that they set a tone and they set a management style with their assistant captain's picks. And that's the first evidence that we get of that. What can we deduce about your management style approaching this President's Cup from the names you announced today?
Well, I feel like they're also great leaders and great match play players. You know, if I start with Ernie and Jeff, their match play record is incredible. And the young guys on our team can lean on those guys for some of their experience playing match play. As we know, it's so different than a regular stroke play tournament. So I think that's a big thing. I think keeping continuity of what's been going on with our team the last few President's Cups and keeping that going was important to me. So those are 2 of the big things that led to the decisions of the captains today.
Mike, some say that Quail Hollow was a turning point, the 17.5, 12.5 loss notwithstanding. Was it a turning point in some ways? Is the President's Cup closer and closer than maybe the viewer would think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously Australia was super close. We had a great chance to win there. We didn't quite get it done. I really think that we had some great momentum. Trevor obviously had to deal with a lot there in Charlotte. We lost some players very close to the event, the last minute. So I thought the guys performed very well. I felt like the energy of our team and the cohesiveness of our team really started to gel. And you can see that's transferred the last couple of years. The guys look for each other a lot more. They play practice rounds together a lot more. They're talking about the President's Cup. They're talking about our team a lot more. That's all positive signs and in a different thing from maybe my era. And maybe it wasn't on the guys' forefront of their mind, and now it is.
Only one of your assistant captains, Mike Camillo Vijegas, is still playing much on the PGA Tour on a pretty regular basis. Is there any concern for you that your guys aren't in the weeds in the locker room with these guys week in, week out?
Yeah, but I think that, you know, with Trevor being out there and being the lead analyst and being connected to the game so closely, that's why I chose Camillo, because he is, you know, he's also in the winners category. So he's actually being paired with the guys quite a bit. And he's a real energetic guy and the guys love him and really gravitate towards him. So Jeff's playing a little bit out there as well. And Ernie's down in Florida. He plays a lot with the guys. He's, even though he's on the Champions Tour with me, he's connected to the guys. So I don't personally see it as a problem. I think we have a good balance of youth and experience, and guys are still connected.
Mike, some would say one of the biggest moments of 2023 was Nick Taylor becoming the first Canadian in 69 years to win the RBC Canadian Open. Can you capitalize on that moment in any way as captain of the President's Cup team?
Well, yeah, that was exciting, super exciting for Nick, for Canadian golf, and he's put himself in a great position. I believe he's fourth on our list right now. And, you know, heading into the major season here, just getting through the Masters, and now with some other majors coming up, the other majors coming up, there's a real opportunity for, you know, some of the other guys to move up the list and other Canadians to move up the list, to your point, Damon, to capitalize on the momentum of Canadian golf right now, and really creating an energy around, you know, the Canadian Open that's coming up in a month, and keeping that buzz going right through the President's Cup in September. So, yeah, we want to capitalize on that.
You'd probably have at least a couple of Canadians on your team, Mike, but in general, your team has barriers that the U.S. team just doesn't face. You have language, you have culture, you have geography. Are those getting any easier to surmount with each President's Cup, or do you think it's still a fresh challenge every time?
Yeah, no doubt, Eamon. It's always been a challenge for our team, but I think we've galvanized the last few years. We're really feeling like a team now. I think the guys, the Koreans just don't stay to themselves, and the South Africans or the Australians, everybody's kind of together now. And I think it started, you know, I think, you know, with Ernie kind of starting to create some dinners. I'm going to Dallas here next week, early in the week, and I'll see some guys on the course, and then we'll have another team dinner Tuesday night. So all those things behind the scenes to galvanize our team and get our guys familiar with each other. And so there's a real bond, because that week you hit the ground running. You know, you want to get to the event in September and have all those, we want to have our team cohesive by the time we get there and not try to do it that week. We want our team cohesive, and that's starting to happen and getting a little easier. Simple thing like food, the culture of our food around all the international players having the things they're used to. A lot of guys aren't used to, you know, bacon and eggs for breakfast, you know. Different cultures, they want their things. And we've got a great chef up here in Montreal that's helping our team out.
I had bacon and eggs this morning, speaking of which. Hey, Mike, listen, Alejandro Toste, I imagine a player that's kind of leapt onto your radar, currently 24th yep. in the international standings. I followed him very closely in Houston. He's a fighter, pugnacious, tough. What are your thoughts on Alejandro Toste potentially making your team?
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. I don't mind that kind of fiery atmosphere and that mindset, I would say, is conducive to good play and match play, can be. So, yeah, he's jumped onto my radar. And, yeah, I'm keeping a close eye on Alejandro, and hopefully he keeps up the great play.
Do you feel as though you've got more clarity on your team, Mike? Because Trevor was kind of hobbled by a lot of guys defecting to live during the entire tenure of his captaincy. Do you feel as though that's less of a concern for you, or is it still in the back of your mind that it could happen?
I feel like it's less. I feel, you know, Trevor, like I said earlier, I think he had to deal with that a lot greater level than I do. You know, still a possibility someone could go over there and play, but I think the core of our team is pretty clear and pretty set, and I think they're, you know, they know how important the President's Cup is, and it's important to them. They've made it clear to me that's very important to them. So I think it's not as much of a factor as a couple of years ago.
Mike, what kind of leader of men do you want to be for your squad?
Yeah, I've been asked that before. I think, you know, I just want to be myself. You know, I want to be myself and be authentic to the guys. And that's how I present myself. I am who I am. You know, I might be a little bit more reserved and quiet, but, you know, you put me between the ropes, you know, the old hockey player comes out in me, and I can be as competitive and want to play anybody and desire to play anybody in my day as I could. And I want to convey that to our guys, that to be ready to play anybody. And I believe in our guys. When I look down the list at our top 20 guys, I'm very confident in our guys. And I want to show that confidence to our players, because I really truly believe in them. And so do our assistant captains.
Mike, you don't need any reminding that it's been 25 years since the international team has won the President's Cup, although there have been some close matches. With such a lopsided history, it's probably not surprising to you that you tend to hear this narrative that the format needs to change or something has to adjust in the same way the Ryder Cup did back in 1979 when it became Europe. Does that bother you in any respect, that kind of story, that maybe it should become a co-ed event, or do you feel as though it undermines the event or your team in any respect?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think it hits me wrong. I do feel like our team gets disrespected when those things are brought up. And I understand the question, because it has been lopsided. But we have a really good team. Like I said, even though we haven't crossed the line, we feel like we have a great chance to this time. The matches have been, anybody who's really paid close attention and watched the matches see that they're super competitive matches, and that it could swing either way with a key putt here and there, a little chip in went the other way for us in Charlotte. Little small things. It's not that far off. So, you know, when I hear those things, I'm like, well, you're not watching closely. These matches are tight. And I suspect it'll be the same in Montreal in September.
Mike, great to see you. Great to see the shield emblazoned on the chest as well. We will speak to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Lots to watch this week. DP World Tour, ISPS Handed Championship, Zurich Classic of New Orleans, Rory and Shane Lowry teaming up, JM Eagle LA Championship, Nelly bidding for six in a row, Mitsubishi Electric Classic. And you want fresh Golf Channel content? Check out our YouTube page at Golf Channel. And by the way, we put this out on social. Scotty and Nelly channeling their inner Mark Wahlberg. Invincible. Now, earlier today, Scotty, in his presser, was asked about Nelly's great run.
One of the people here asked me, like, is this turning into a competition between you and Nelly? And I was like, I don't know, man. I think if it's a competition, she's got me pretty beat right now. I mean, five wins in a row. You know, she had that T16 at the beginning of the year, which was just terrible. Can't believe she did that. But yeah, it's pretty special stuff. I mean, to win four times in a row and then show up at a major championship and win is extremely impressive. And so I'm extremely happy for her. And, you know, I think we've all seen the golf swing. I wish I could see it more in person, but we don't really run into them too much outside of some TaylorMade shoots and stuff like that. But, obviously some great golf, some historic stuff, and, you know, hopefully she keeps it up.
I love it. Game recognizes game. Dominance. I feel like we need it in this sport.
And how often the reminders of mortality come at this level of sports? You know, all these guys are out there trying to catch Scottie Scheffler. They've got a 15-year-old gaining on them at the other end of the scale as well.
Tough. You better shoot those scores. This was a lot of fun. Great to be back with you. We'll do it again noon tomorrow. Enjoy your Monday.